What is going on, Belly Up Sports fam? It's your boy Shaka Cummings, along with my partner in crime, Parker Ainsworth. Welcome to FN Sports, the podcast where two teachers grade sports' biggest issues. Parker, as we record on a Monday morning, how was your weekend, sir?
It was a pretty low-key, laid-back July 4th weekend. Not a whole lot of celebrating in COVID summer, but you know, it was good to have an extra day off, watch a little Hamilton. Highly recommend. I don't know, how many times did you watch Hamilton this weekend, Mr. Cummings?
I only watched it once. I saw it live when it was in Dallas, and then what Parker knows about me is that back when Spotify, it was the craze of everyone posting all the songs that they listened to over the year on New Year's, all my recommendations were Hamilton songs, so I really do enjoy the musical quite a bit, but I only watched it once. I did see the barbecue that you had, which was pretty amazing. Like, I was a little bit jealous, and we were actually cooking ribs. Like, we were cooking ribs at the house, and I was still jealous of the barbecue that you had. So,
well, you made yours. I had to go pick mine up somewhere, but it was very, very good. I still got some leftovers in the fridge, actually. Very, very good.
Okay, so I'll be over for dinner by 8 hours. So let's talk gold stars and detentions.
My first gold star goes to Zion Williamson for both being in incredible shape after this layoff from the NBA. I don't know if you saw the picture that went circulating this weekend, but Zion looks jacked. He might weigh the same. He might still weigh 275 or whatever he weighed before, but it is a very different looking 275 pounds. Talked about how he and his stepfather did a lot of working out over break. They said they were in the gym, quote, every day. So if that's the case, shout out to him for finding a gym to be in every day. I guess most gyms wouldn't kick out Zion, though, if he came knocking.
Like, who's going to be the dude to walk up to Zion and go, I'm sorry, Mr. 6'9", 270-pound man, you have to leave. And he's ripped.
And no one's telling that guy, especially now, with all the muscles he's got going on. But the Bane mask, or the mask across his face as if he was Bane, was quite an extra touch. So well played, Zion Williamson, gold star.
Gold star to Maya Moore. Her story has kind of been out there. So just briefly, she has given up her WNBA career for the last couple of years to work on an initiative. There was a man in prison who shouldn't have been there. She believed, based on the story and all the information he had, that he shouldn't have been there. And she dedicated her life to making sure that he's freed. This weekend, or I guess last week, finally, justice was served. And so all the pictures of Maya Moore on the internet at the prison embracing, and of course she does all the morning shows. It was an incredible story. So go star to Maya Moore. That's bigger than basketball, obviously. More than an athlete. All good.
So I got a question, Shaga. We had a bunch of, if you were on Twitter last week, you had to have seen that, like, they released day by day like a bajillion 2K21 covers for the upcoming video game.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's it going to take to get Maya Moore on the cover of one of these movies? Like, what else? She was the best women's basketball player of all time, or at least of, like, this generation of women's basketball.
I mean, it's arguable, but it's fair.
And she drops out in the middle of her career to do something, like you said, bigger than basketball. Meanwhile, we have, like, 18 2K21 covers, and women are in the game. What's it going to take to get Maya Moore on a 2K21 cover?
And I want her on the 2K cover in the gray sweats with the white t-shirt outside the prison. Because, like, to me, that's the signature Maya Moore moment. All the championships that she has, Connecticut and in the WNBA, like, that's her signature moment.
I'm going off-cuff detention on that one to 2K20. Too many covers for no money. We need one Maya Moore cover. I don't even care if it's the sweats or in her uniform. I just want one 2K21 Maya Moore cover.
No, that's fair. That kind of leads me into my next gold star, which is I was going to gold star 2K21 for the Kobe covers. Now I'm like, oh, do I need to gold star them? But no, the Kobe covers are awesome. Like, I'm with you. Like, maybe Maya Moore instead of Damian Lillard, I'd be okay with that. Or even Vince Carter. But the Kobe covers for the, they always do a Legends edition. Like, in 2K20, Dwayne Wade was on the cover for the Legends edition. And so, obviously, they decided to do two different 2K21 covers with Kobe Bryant. They have him both the 8 and the 24. And so, obviously, I think that that's really cool. So, gold star to them for that. Although, obviously, they dropped the ball on Maya Moore.
My last gold star slash detention while I'm mucking up the segment today is I'm going to give the New England Patriots a gold star and myself a gold star for calling Cam Newton to the Patriots back on our episode of FN Sports on March 30th. You can go back and listen. I think it's, you know, Josh McDaniels, if you follow the trends, he did well with Tim Tebow in Denver, and he wanted Lamar Jackson a couple of years back. I think he's got some ideas up his sleeve about how to do this. They drafted some tight ends and are looking to like stay in this realm of Cam Newton world. Also, shout out to like getting it in the press exactly 5 minutes before the story about them cheating came out again. We certainly don't hear a whole lot about that right now. And then I'm also going to somewhat sideswipe and give a small detention to my co-host here, Shaka, for having given them a B- a couple weeks back. Was it a couple months back for the idea of Cam Newton in New England? Said a B-, and wasn't sure how the X's and O's fit. And I believe you said it was just a B- and not lower because Cam Newton's really good. Like, you actually thought that the fit was that bad, but it's Cam, so maybe something will work out.
Yeah, and I'm still not sure if it will, but I'm hopeful because, again, Cam is such an incredible talent. I am surprised that the Patriots went down that road. But let me just say this. That was the most self-serving gold star in the history of FN Sports right there. The most self-serving gold star in the history of FN Sports. I want to give a gold star to Mo Bamba, who is the center for the Orlando Magic. And Parker Ainsworth is going to love this, former University of Texas basketball player. Mo Bamba is partnering with local organizations around voting rights and equity in the community of Orlando, and the Magic are supporting him in that endeavor. And so I saw some of those tweets that came out this weekend. I was like, Mo Bamba, okay. Like, he's more than just a song, guys. Like, he's more than an athlete, just like Maya Moore. So that's incredible. Great job, Mo. I'm going to throw a detention in here as well. I'm going to detention Rob Manfred. And I'm detentioning the commissioner of Major League Baseball because he went on Dan Patrick's show last week and said, regardless of anything that was going to happen in terms of negotiations, there was no way that we were going to have more than 60 baseball games this year. Like, that was the number. Why do the negotiations then if you're not going to give on the 60 games number? Like, why not just let baseball players know that that's the number? We're not doing anything different. I mean, Trevor Bauer came out and said this. He's like, they're going to come out and he's going to say, like, oh, I don't know if we're even going to have baseball this year. But then they're going to find a way to do 50, 55 games at the most. So now they're doing 60. They were always going to do 60. Like, you just let baseball drag their name through the mud. And why? Rob Manfred, between the Houston Astros, the Boston Red Sox, calling the trophy a piece of metal, his handling of all of this stuff, like, his job really has to be in question at this point, in my mind. So detention to Rob Manfred. We're going to go ahead and jump into the pod. We got some awesome thesis statements that we're going to take on. We're going to talk about teams that are changing their names in this current climate of sports. We're also going to talk about the NBA and their bubble city. Except we talked about the one in Orlando. Now we're going to talk about the one that they're potentially going to do in Chicago. And then we will wrap up with a conversation around the potential for the cancellation of the NFL's preseason Hall of Fame game to impact the NFL 2020 season. So, without further ado, Mr. Ainsworth, are you ready to go, sir?
Ready when you are, Shaka. Okay, Mr. Cummings, our first thesis for this week actually was a big story at the end of last week and into the weekend, and it looks like it may be a big story the next couple days. Surrounding the Washington Redskins, we've talked a lot about, you know, pro sports teams and their names. And so this week's thesis is teams should seriously review and consider changing their names when protests are raised questioning their mascot. What would you grade that thesis as?
This thesis is fairly broad. And even with its fairly broad nature, I think I'm still going to go in the B range. I think I'll go B- though. So what do you think, Mr. Ainsworth?
I laugh because I think we're actually in a very similar boat. I was like, even as broad as it is, it makes me feel like, anyway, maybe it's just the culture and climate we're in right now, but I'm thinking B or B+ as well. I'll go B+ to just be a little different, but I really think it's a pretty high scoring thesis. Okay, Mr. Cummings, so we both settled into the B range on this thesis. Teams should seriously review and consider changing their names when protests are raised questioning their mascot. So I know, obviously, in the last few days, it's been very heavy on everyone's mind because of what we're seeing happen in Washington, D.C. First of all, what made you think it was a great thesis, and what gave you any pause, if at all?
Yeah, let's start with both Parker and I are going to agree, which is when you get into this space of conversation around mascots that are based on ethnicity, racial characteristics, like, there's no reason to have them. Like, let's get rid of those. There's no reason to get into this realm where you could potentially be looked at as dehumanizing a group of people because of the name that you want to attach to your sports team. To put it all out there, Parker and I have been doing research for a couple of stories that we've been writing for Belly Up. And one of the stories that makes me lose my mind is the history behind Cleveland, their baseball team, and their name. Once upon a time, Cleveland was named after Nap Lajoie, a baseball player on the team. And they were called the Cleveland Naps. And then he leaves, and the ownership says, hey, I don't know what the name's going to be. Let's put it out there. Let's see what names people can come up with.
To be fair, Shaka, without context, the Cleveland Naps would also be a problematic name.
Oh, absolutely. No, when I first read that, I stood up like I was ready to punch my computer. But then I got the story. And then as a black man, I calmed myself down and sat that down. They put the name out there, the opportunity to name, and the writers came up with the name Indians. And then the newspapers followed with like these racist caricatures and these very racially insensitive jokes. And at the time, Cleveland actually had an indigenous ball player on the squad. So they would use him in these racist caricatures. And it's like, don't talk to me about naming conventions that are supposed to honor the Native Americans, the indigenous peoples of this country, because those naming conventions don't do that. And the research consistently tells us that. Now, what happens is people will go and cite these polls that have been conducted, and anytime you look at the polls, you'll find that there's fallacies in the way that the polls were created. So if you are interested, check out our article on Belly Up Sports on the Washington Football Franchise, where I actually cite some of the research that's already been done. The University of California at Berkeley actually did research back in 2016, and they actually spoke to people who were heavily involved in tribal culture, people who truly are indigenous and Native Americans, rather than like these internet polls where people will self-identify as Native American. You have no idea who that person is. And when they asked these people who were heavily involved in tribal culture, is the name of the Washington football team offensive? They were like, yeah. 2/3 of the people said that it was. So like, why don't we listen to the people who are being impacted by this, right? There's a study that's been done on how indigenous people view themselves based on pop cultural references. And this study was done back in 2005 through the University of Nebraska. Once again, that research is in the article that we wrote for the Washington football team. Go look it up. And they will tell you that these polls that come out are full of fallacies because you don't know who's actually answering these things. Like, you can actually go to a reservation and talk to people. So why wouldn't you do that to get the real response versus kind of these polls that are done where you don't know who's going to be responding on the other end? People who kind of get into this whole mindset of the name is supposed to honor, like if you really want to honor indigenous people, give money to reservations and to indigenous schools and hire indigenous peoples to be managers and front office people. Don't tell me that the name is supposed to honor them. Right? Because that's ridiculous. And if that truly is what you believe, then go name the team the Caucasian Colonists or something like that. Because that, if that's what you really believe, then that should be the name, right? Because it honors.
Do you remember the Bomani Jones shirt he wore on? Was it Pardon the Interruption or Highly Questionable? One time he wore a like Caucasian shirt, but it was like scripted to look just like the Cleveland Indians.
Yeah, I do remember that. Like, I mean,
that was a big story at the time. Yeah,
but that's the irony, right? The name's supposed to honor, but then we don't honor, except for Notre Dame. But I don't think y'all ready for that conversation, because we could have that one too. Like, I'm willing to have it if folks are. Anyway, Parker and I both recognize and both are of similar mindset that if you got these Native American mascots where you're dehumanizing an ethnicity and a group of people to kind of put a mascot on your sports team, yeah, we need to get rid of that. This is 2020. That ain't cool.
So, I mean, obviously, people are not mascots, right? Like, living, breathing human beings are not supposed to be mascots or caricatures for your sports teams. There are, frankly, lots of more clever things to go with. You know, for those that, you know, are new to the pod or whatever, we really are both teachers. And one of the more arduous or uncomfortable or whatever phone calls I've ever had was one time I assigned, there were options on the letter, but you either wrote a letter to Dan Snyder asking him to change his football team's name, or you wrote a letter to the city of Washington, D.C.'s mayor at the time, because the city of D.C. actually does not let the team play inside the city limits. That's why they don't play in the city anymore. And to kind of wrap up a unit in fifth grade history, we like wrote these letters and had them sent out. And this one dad was really concerned that I was forcing his kid to write a letter to Dan Snyder and da da da. And then I very quickly was like, actually, your son had options and he chose to write to Dan Snyder as opposed to the mayor of D.C. People that wrote to D.C., I did have a couple of kids that were saying, you know, oh, it's a way to keep the memory alive, whatever, like the very cliche arguments, trying to like let kids have options, right? Then the dad just proceeded to have a 30-minute conversation with me about how that was the correct argument. And I was like, no, listen, you're not going to change my mind. And I'm not going to budge on this. I gave your kids options and your kid has a heart and picked the right option. Like, I don't know what you want me to tell you.
You're raising a kid with empathy, you son of a gun.
Yeah, like this is a real, you know, a thing that we touch on a lot as two history teachers. I would also say that it's interesting because the way the thesis is written, this is not just about Washington's pro football team or even the Cleveland baseball team or even the Florida State Seminoles or the South Dakota Sioux. It's the way it's written, you could look at it as every mascot. And I think, you know, you and I are history teachers. We could sit here and talk about how the Mississippi Rebels and Colonel Reb are kind of a problematic mascot as well. Like, we're talking about taking down Confederate statues across the country and this, that, and the other. And these mascots are all over T-shirts. Do we burn those up? You know, you have the UNLV Rebels as well, which makes me question more because, like, what, Nevada isn't still in the South. I don't understand that one.
Yeah, like, as history teachers, we know that Nevada was not a part of the Confederacy. So it's like, huh?
Like, what were you rebelling? So there's lots of problematic mascots. You're going to even get into, if you want to talk about, like, Boomer Sooner in Oklahoma's kind of got a questionable past. There's different ones across the country. I think the main thing is, though, is that this thesis asks, if there are protests and people that have a problem with your mascot, should you change it? And, like, I don't mean to be, like, that millennial new wave whatever, but, like, guess what? If your team name's offensive, it's way easier to tell your guys to change your team name. Even with all the branding and marketing and so on that goes into that, that takes a little bit of creativity and some like dedication to a decent cause, as opposed to telling people to just get over it. Like that doesn't seem to be equally weighted work to me. Like being, oh, well, get over it. Like, no, like you get over it. You tell your marketing people we've had a bad name for a long time and times have changed.
And it's so funny because we'll have a third color variant of new stuff that'll come out and they'll make buku bucks. You realize that if you change your mascot and change your name, all your stuff gets to be new. And then now your fan base has to buy all new stuff. Like, think about all the money that's going to come in. But whatever.
They're talking about, like, oh, well, kids are trying to buy Chase Young jerseys and they can't find them on Nike's website. It's like, you know what? They're going to buy it no matter what color or logo is on it. Like, it doesn't matter. And then you can go back and resell the old Alex Smith or whoever else you can sell in Washington.
Absolutely. There's a whole throwback market. So you can sell those. There you go.
I don't know what other current players they are going to sell there because they're not very good, but maybe that's good. Anyway, I don't think this is that difficult an issue. The reason I gave it a B+, I think, and not like an A+, not a straight up A+, was that you're going to run into, if it's as broad as the thesis is, right? Teams should seriously review and consider changing their names when protesters raise questions their mascot. Like, you can have some mascots that get changed just because people don't like the mascot. Like, obviously, we talked a little bit off pod about the Washington Bullets and people connecting that to DC's violence and things like that. And so they changed the Washington Wizards. I maintain that the Bullets were one of the best team names going, and I miss the Bullets. And I didn't think it was the most problematic mascot in Washington, so I don't know why it was the first one to change. There's also just mascots that, you know, Texans going to change because people think that, oh, we should change that mascot to something more like the Astros and Rockets. Like, just the vague term protest there as opposed to protesting injustice or protesting inhumanity or whatever, I think is why I didn't get quite give it an A+. I live in Dallas. The Texas Rangers have a pretty problematic history if you want to look at, like, the actual law enforcement force. I don't know. Are we going to change the Texas Rangers? I would need to hear the argument, not just blanket protest means change.
Can we change it to, like, Texas Walker Texas Rangers? Like, would that one? Then right. It's honoring Chuck Norris, and obviously we should all honor Chuck. So that's where I go as well. Like, my issue, imagine someone who has problems with capitalism and they begin making these connections to capitalism and systemic racism, and now they want the New York Mets to change their name from the Metropolitans. Like, it does feel like there's a line, and I don't know exactly where the line is, where you could have legitimate protests and what you're asking for feels disconnected. And I don't know, again, exactly where that line is, but that's why I went B- as well, is because, okay, you could protest the name of the New York Jets because they used to be the New York Titans and maybe you like that name better, but that doesn't mean the Jets should necessarily change. And there, of course, are some that feel fairly obvious that, yeah, let's go ahead and change that. The other reason why I went B-, you know, I'm cool with pro teams spending their money, colleges that are making billions of dollars off the backs of free labor, having to spend some of that money. When you get into some of these high schools, it can be a lot tougher for them. And it's not to say that they shouldn't change. If you have a high school Native American mascot at this point, please change. And I understand that that might take some time because the costs that are associated with doing things like changing names in end zones and repainting things and getting new jerseys for all the players. And I mean, in different school districts, we have different levels of wealth, right? Because you can go to Allen, Texas, and they've got a $40 million football stadium or something ridiculous. I feel a little bit of sympathy in that case.
Yeah, I was going to say that the deal there is that they're not dealing with major college or even professional at all sport money, right? And then that's also different case by case because you have the small high schools that really, like, even if they said today, yeah, you're right, we need to change our name from, you know, this Native American mascot or from that Civil War related mascot or whatever it is, anything that's, you know, characterizing a group of people or could be used to intimidate a group of people, like, they could have all the best intentions, but it's going to take them years to do it, and it'll be slow because they just got to phase it out because they can't afford to do it all at once. I would still say it's worth starting that phase, though. I don't know necessarily that I would say it can't be done. It just, it's going to come in phases. Like, a school that we play, their mascot, the school I work at, plays against a school whose mascot was the Crusaders, and it was brought up to them that the Crusaders is a problematic mascot. And so, like, within the first 2 years of that being brought up, they changed it to, like, the Highlanders or something, like a horse-looking mascot. But, like, if you play their JV team, their JV team is wearing old varsity uniforms that has Crusaders on them still. It's still being phased out. I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing, because it's not like you can erase the pictures off of your website from years ago either. Like, your history is your history, and you need to own it a little bit.
Yeah, I'm cool with having patience in the process. I just, you know, there's a recognition, just like you said, and keep in mind that the school that Parker's talking about is one that has a fair amount of money, because it's an independent school, like, I know it. But I understand, just, yeah, I think that the B- comes in that we might need to have some patience with levels that are not at the professional level or that aren't making billions of dollars, right? Just a little bit of patience, I think, will go a long way in some of these conversations. Okay, Parker, so the thesis statement for this commercial is James Harden has the best beard in sports. What do you think about that thesis statement?
Oh, I give it an A. You know, as a Houston guy, we seem to have an affinity for our beards between guys like him, Dallas Keuchel, lots of big beards in the Houston area. What do you think about the thesis?
So I'm a Jets fan, and I absolutely love the beard that Ryan Fitzpatrick has. So maybe I would give Ryan Fitzpatrick the nod over James Harden. But you're talking to a couple of bearded teachers, and we know a thing or two about making sure that you maintain that mane. So check out the Beard Struggle. The Beard Struggle, they make oils, they make balms. They even have this heated comb thing to make sure that you get your beard straight so that you're looking fresh.
I know I've really enjoyed using the oil they make for my quarantine beard of sorts. It's nice and long these days, but it'll keep it nice and healthy and hydrated. And if you're listening to our show, you can use FN Sports 15 and get 15% off your oils, your balms, your shampoos, conditioners, whatever you need to use to keep your beard looking healthy.
Absolutely. Check out the Beard Struggle at thebeardstruggle.com. Whether you're just starting to grow or you have a luscious mane already, the Beard Struggle's got all the products that you need. The Beard Struggle. Feast your face.
Mr. Ainsworth, our second thesis statement for the podcast. The NBA bubble city in Chicago is a good idea. I throw that at you, Mr. Ainsworth, and how do you grade that thesis statement?
Pretty quick flunk. I didn't even have to think about it very hard. Very, very quick flunk.
Okay, the player's not going to be eligible because I'm going to go D, but I do have one thing to consider. Otherwise, I think we're going to agree quite a bit on this particular issue. Mr. Ainsworth, out here flunking students. It is very rare that Mr. Ainsworth will give an F to a thesis statement. And so the NBA bubble city in Chicago is a good idea. That's the quickest F I've seen you give. You flunked that hard and fast. So talk to me about why it's such a bad idea in your mind.
My initial tweet, I think, when I first saw this pop up as a, you know, Wojnarowski alert or notification on Twitter was, this is getting to the point where it's unethical. So here's a couple thoughts I got. My initial thought is, A, if Chicago is a safer bubble city, let's do the real thing there and not do it in Orlando. If you're not paying attention to coronavirus cases on the rise or whatever, and you're staying inside and being your own hermit self, that's fine. Orlando is looking like it's one of the worst places to do this, if not the worst place to do this, as we're all about to start the NBA at the end of the month there. So that's my first initial thought is like, whoa. If Chicago is a safer option, let's send the 22 teams there and not just the 8 that didn't make it. So for those that don't know what we're talking about, Jackie McMullen pushed an article at the end of the week last week saying that the NBA is in, quote, deep discussions on a second bubble in Chicago for the 8 teams that were not invited to play in Florida, enabling them to participate in mini training camps and subsequent games against other clubs with a target date of September. There's a couple things they have that are problems with that. One is the idea of a mini training camp. Like, we're talking about how injuries will be more prevalent in Orlando because of the lack of preparation for the playoffs and things like that. So, of course, the natural thing would be to give the guys in Chicago less time to prep. Like, that makes no sense to me. The idea that these guys are even at all going out and competing in September as opposed to spending the month of August is just for TV dollars, because there's no way that we need to figure out who the worst teams are a month after the playoffs have started. Like, this doesn't seem to make any sense on any front to me. It doesn't have any indication as to what this is being done for, except for TV dollars. It's starting suspiciously late in the playoff picture to where you're probably not going to have a playoff game on TV every day. So just going to do this that way they have something else to put on TV on the other days. I don't see why. There's 8 teams not going, and 6 of them are in the Eastern Conference. So I guess that's a way to get Eastern Conference markets their, you know, fans to be able to watch or something. But my argument to that is just don't suck. You should have. There was a big window. a bunch of teams were able and eligible to go to Orlando. They made it within 4 games of the 8 seed spot, which it let probably too many teams go. Like, we could sit here and argue about should Phoenix and Washington really be going, right? The idea that there are teams that are not going to Orlando that somehow deserve or have earned the idea to play out an extra tournament here just seems ludicrous to me. It's the expense of player safety on the court to go watch these games. But I'd also argue that, you know, the NBA, as much money as it makes and as much you know, revenues it generates. And I don't think we're even like necessarily looking into how this makes money for not just the players and TV deals and so on. Like, there are so many local markets that, you know, there will be sports bars and restaurants that are watching these games unless they're shut down for COVID, right? There'll be all of these different entities that are surviving around this. You know, we're sitting here recording for a podcast network that talks sports all the time. Content would be great. I don't mean that. I don't think the NBA is an essential business. Like, at the end of the day, it is not essential that all 30 teams, that any team, much less all 30 teams, be playing. Because you're seeing with the National Women's Soccer League in Orlando, like, bubbles get penetrated by this virus. And it's not an if, it's a when someone gets sick in the NBA while in the bubble, you know, aside from the people that have already tested positive. I don't see why do that. Why are we going to do that to another 8 teams worth of players? It just seems silly to me.
Absolutely. And let me just say, for anyone who knows Parker Ainsworth, for him to like so readily say that the NBA is not an essential business, like, to us it is essential. Like, if it's on, we'll watch it. But the reality is that it's not. And so you start thinking about the risks that are involved with the teams that are already going to the bubble. Now we're going to do this with 8 more teams in a city that we can look up the statistics. Just Google COVID in Chicago, Google COVID in Orlando. It's not like Chicago is significantly better in terms of COVID and the management of the disease. So, like, now you're going to put these players in this other place where potentially they could contract COVID. It feels like there's no rationale as to why this should happen, right? And what I always tell my kids in my history classes is, if you don't understand, it's because of money. Just follow the money. And as you pointed out, Parker, they're just going to put these on the off days from the playoff games. And there are people who are going to watch. But here's what the NBA hopefully understands. We're already seeing with the bubble city in Orlando, not everybody's down for that. Not everybody's going. You think that these 8 teams, that they're not playing for anything, that all those guys are going to go? If I am Atlanta, I'm tying Trae Young to a chair, locking the chair in a room, and then putting security around his house 24/7 to make sure the man don't leave. He ain't getting on a plane to go to Chicago to get COVID. You must be out your mind. Like, we have too much invested in his success to potentially allow him to go into this bubble. And what's the NBA going to do? Is the NBA going to force teams to send their guys? Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, the Knicks don't have anybody. But if they did, I wouldn't want them to send them to Chicago for this. Like, so what do you do? You can't tell teams and tell players that they have to go. Because if they don't have to go in Orlando, you're not going to tell them they have to go to Chicago. So when a bunch of guys don't go, you're going to be essentially up a creek. And what we've already seen is that we've got close to 30 players who, through this testing process, is coming out, have been diagnosed with COVID. So now we're going to potentially put at risk these other 8 teams and their players, right? Because you're going to test them. You're going to find out some of them have COVID. Now you're going to put them together. And like you said, it's an if not a win in these bubble scenarios. It just feels crazy to me to do this. Except for 2 reasons. One actually is the money. There's a bigger pool of money, I would imagine, if you got more games. And so the bigger pool of money means more money goes into the player's pot when you start divvying out what we're going to do with the money in this shortened season. And so while LeBron doesn't need another check, we have to remember that there's a 15th guy on the bench, and he's going to do this for 2 years. And as much money as he can make in those 2 years, he's going to be able to jumpstart his life based on the dollars that have come in, right? And so I do understand that. I also understand teams that aren't in Orlando wanting to find a real legitimate vehicle to make sure that their young players develop. Because essentially what's happening is, like, we can look at the Lakers and the Bucks, and you're right, those teams don't suck, and these other teams do. But damn it, you let Phoenix in. So now Phoenix gets this several months of development, Sacramento gets it, Washington gets it, and the Knicks don't, the Bulls don't, Minnesota doesn't. These teams are saying, give us an opportunity to make sure that our young players can develop in a competitive scenario as well. And the NBA's answer to everything, apparently, is a bubble. So now let's do a bubble here. We got the bubble here. Let's do the bubble here. And we'll do the bubble here later. So we'll figure out all the things that are wrong with this bubble, and we'll make it right in this bubble. And okay, I understand that reasoning. It's still a D again, because this things will go wrong. And Chicago is not Orlando, or it's not Disney. So I don't know how. I imagine that they're going to use the Bulls facilities, and they're going to have to figure out a way to basically do everything there. I've been on that campus in Chicago for the Bulls. It's not Disney. I don't know how they're going to house all the players and figure all those logistical pieces out. It's going to be a nightmare. And to say, in the name of player development, we're going to do this, I don't know how they're going to figure it out.
Even then, it becomes a glorified G League tournament, because the best player, so like Trae Young in Atlanta, right? Atlanta only has won 20 games thus far, and so theoretically their season's over unless this bubble happens.
And you know, Carl Anthony Towns isn't going. Like, I don't even know. I'm wondering if, like, do you think Chicago will let Zach LaVine and Kobe White play in this thing?
That's what I'm getting at, though, is like, you're going to have it from two sides. You're going to have the teams tell the more established stars not to go because of COVID concerns and because of jumping into playing too quickly concerns. Because we also know that this is happening in September, right? And it may last until October.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, the new season's going to start in late December or January, right? So like a major injury is going to throw off next season, right? So you're going to get hurt in this tournament for what? And that's not even talking about COVID concerns and health, right?
Yeah, imagine if you are a potential free agent and now you're like, get invited to this thing. You're like, let me get this straight. So you are going to put at risk my potential free agency and my whole next season for something that we're already losers and we've already established that we're losers and I'm supposed to do that. Like, if you're a dude like Tristan Thompson, you can't put up both middle fingers fast enough. Like, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it.
You've got the free agency side of it. You've got teams wanting their, you know, mid-20-year-old aspects to not go. You've got players generally, like, not even necessarily free agent players. Like, a Trae Young's not going to be a free agent next year, but he's on that rookie contract. He's got a big one coming, you know? Like, he's not going to want to leave. Lots of reasons not to go. And so then you're like, well, we can incentivize it by saying, you know, you give the tournament the number one pick, right? The number one pick comes out of it. So you're either saying what happens there is that, like, Golden State shows up with a Steph Curry and a Klay Thompson and just murks everyone. Like, then they're already supposed to get the number one overall pick, and I get that, but like, what fun is that? Like, that's not fun at all.
If you think that Golden State is sending Steph Curry and Klay Thompson,
but
they're not even going to do that. It's not even G League. It's going to be Summer League. That's what it's going to be. That's worse.
Right. And so what's going to happen is then it's like, either teams have to send guys, which doesn't make sense, and that kind of a thing happens where the Golden State is like, okay, then we obliterate everyone. Or you're going to ask some, like, fringe guys that, like, you know, not necessarily the 15th guy that needs the dollars, like you're saying. I'm talking like the 8th, 9th, 10th guy on a Chicago or the 8th, 9th, 10th guy on a Detroit.
Frank Ntilikina.
Right. So those guys are going to then go compete in a tournament and risk their health. And the end prize is we get the number one pick to replace your app? No, there's no way. Like, that's not going to fly. That's like, no one's going to, the financially stable players, and by stable, I mean, like, will have a job for the next year or two at least, are not going to sign off on this. There's no reason for them to be playing in Chicago.
The more that you talk about this, the more stupid this sounds. Like, think about this. I'm a free agent. You want me to go play in this deal for this team that I'm probably not even going to be playing for next year, so that team could get the number one pick. Like, you must be out your damn mind.
For reference as to how silly this is in Chicago, Portland is very, very capable of taking the 8th seed in the NBA playoffs. We've seen what Dame Lillard can do in a playoff series if they just get a shot, right? Dame Lillard and several Blazers have been like, I don't know if playing is worth it. In Orlando, when they have a chance at the real title. Like, why is anyone going to think this is worth it?
I mean, there are guys who, I don't think anyone would question that if Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving played, that Brooklyn would have a legitimate shot, not just at the East, but at a championship. And them dudes are like, yeah, no, we're not doing it. And now, like, Spencer Dinwiddie's not sure he's going to go. DeAndre Jordan already said he's not going. Like, these bottom teams in Orlando, where there's actually a championship at stake, those guys aren't going. I think Bradley Beal said that he's not going. So, like, I don't know what the rationale is going to be. Like, if you can't convince those guys that a championship is worth doing this, I don't know how you're convincing the best player. Like, Karl-Anthony Towns is not doing this. His mother died from COVID. I'm telling you, he's not going to Chicago. You can forget it. Like, I'm even envisioning, like, if you're Cleveland and you got Colin Sexton, I mean, that dude looks like an absolute stud. You're going to go send him so that he could potentially get injured or get COVID? I mean, come on, guys.
Well, and then if this just becomes a G League tournament, I'd almost double down and say
Summer League. It's not even going to be G League. It's going to be Summer League. What I'm
saying, though, is like, are the top teams going to, I mean, the top teams, some of them are the top teams because they run pretty strong organizations that have good top to bottom management and invest a lot in their Summer League and G League rosters and presence. So they don't get the benefit of that because they didn't suck last season. It doesn't make any sense. I just don't see why this was even discussed. I understand why Jackie McMullen reported it, right? Her job is to talk about what the NBA is talking about and what they're doing. I just don't understand why this is what they're talking about or doing.
If we don't understand why it's happening, it's the money. That's why.
Okay, Mr. Cummings, our last thesis this week is about the NFL, another sport that's about to start up. The NFL's cancellation of the Hall of Fame game and other preseason games signals that the 2020 NFL season is in trouble.
I'm going to go C+. Like, I want to leave some room that there's potential that that's actually the case. But C+ is kind of middle of the road, so that's what I'm feeling. What are you thinking?
So I'm thinking also, a C+-ish, B-minus-ish range, somewhere in the middle there to me. But I think my reasoning is there. I think part of it is because the way the thesis is phrased, more so than anything about potential troubles. All right, Mr. Cummings, you gave the thesis a C+. What made you think it's eligible?
Again, whenever we kind of go into this middle of the road, it's like, okay, I can see both sides, right? So let's start with why we need to understand that there's a potential that the 2020 season is in trouble. So I'm going to start with that first. Number one, they're canceling games now. Like, you can say it's preseason, you can say the Hall of Fame, whatever. The Hall of Fame ceremonies for 2020 have been canceled. Not postponed, canceled. And therefore, as a part of that, they went ahead and canceled the games. And there are other preseason games that have been canceled. The NFL has been the one league that has been consistent in saying, we're doing this. We're doing everything the way that we've always done it. We did a podcast about potentially moving the draft, and they're like, nope, draft is staying where it is. And then they just went ahead and they adjusted, and I think that they actually did an incredible job of the virtual draft. Free agency, man, it's so close to all these leagues closing, maybe they should move it. Nope, they went through free agency. The off-season activities, nope, we're still doing those. We're just doing them virtually. This is the one league that hasn't moved anything. And now this close to the 2020 season, they're moving stuff? Okay, that is scary as heck. That means that the NFL is now starting to do the analysis, and they're starting to say there's a potential that 2020 is not going to look anything like what we anticipated it would look like. It almost feels like what I believe was the tenor from a lot of Americans back in March and April. If we just wait this thing out, it's going to go away. And the NFL kind of, yeah, that sounds good to us. Let's wait this thing out. It'll go away because this billions of dollars are staked for us. And now they've waited it out and we're in July and numbers are rising in multiple states across the U.S. And the NFL's like, okay, now we got to take this thing seriously, because before we were 8 months away from a season. And now the season's like around the corner. We would have players at training camps now. We would be getting ready to look for the preseason games at the beginning of August, end of July timeframe. This close to the season, things are starting to get shifted. It makes it feel like 2020, it's not going to necessarily happen the way that the NFL anticipated or the way that we anticipated as fans. So that's the thing that jumps out to me right away for it to be this close to the season. The season is potentially in trouble.
So I agree on a lot of fronts. I think the NFL has benefited completely from just like literally when this hit in the year. Like, the Super Bowl was played and then a couple weeks later we're talking about it hitting U.S. soil. And like, there was even articles put out because of like, you know, not knowing much about the virus and not knowing how it had come to U.S. soil, like that Kansas City won versus San Francisco winning might have actually negated some cases because of the population density in San Fran for a potential championship parade, right? Like it was really that well timed for the NFL to wrap up, and then the virus hits. And now that their season's about to start again, they're already at the point where, like you're saying, they're very literally canceling games. And for those of you that are like, oh, but they're preseason games or whatever, or think that Shaka's full of it because he's like, they're games, but they don't really count for anything.
I mean, I am full of it, but continue.
Those are money-making ventures. They don't put those things on TV for nothing. Like, there's a reason that the NFL owners want that many preseason games, because most players and coaches don't feel like they need that many preseason games, right? They want a couple maybe to see some of the young, new, whatever, but they really don't need a lot. It's more for us to watch the rookies trot out in the jerseys for the first time, right? It's not about them.
And just so that folks understand the dollars and cents, the salaries that are paid to players for the preseason games, it's all the same, regardless of whether you're J.J. Watt or you're the 75th guy. But the television revenue and the stadium revenue in terms of what you pay for the tickets don't change from the regular season. If you buy a season ticket package for your NFL team, the preseason games are on there. You got to pay for them just like you pay for game 8. And the television revenue is divided so that the preseason games can actually be streamed out via local markets. But that's all a part of the package that NBC, that ESPN, that CBS, and that Fox all pay for. They have to do those preseason games.
Right, and they pay for all those, the companies do, because they want that intriguing quarterback matchup that, like, ooh, what are they going to go with the quarterback here? They want the footage from that to be with their brand. And so, like, there is a lot of money circulating those. So canceling those is not a, you know, poo-pooing on nothing, something that doesn't matter. I also think it's indicative that we're looking at, you know, this is supposed to be the first year we're looking at 17 potential games, right? We're talking about, like, how we're going to add games, and the NFL is also now taking away preseason games, and that doesn't seem to mesh very well to me. Typically, you got rookies showing up July 21st, veterans showing up late, like about a week later, and preseason camps start rolling. They've typically already had OTAs in person and lots of meetings and stuff like that to this point. All of that to this point has not happened unless it happened virtually, or unless you know Tom Brady personally, apparently. And moving forward, it looks like they're saying, you know, there's an article that came out this morning and said the Packers management talking about how they really are looking like time is not going to be on their side. Like, they're not going to be able to get their rookies safely to Wisconsin or to, if depending wherever you want to travel to do your preseason stuff, by July 21st, because they're going to have to quarantine for a couple weeks, and they're still going to have to make sure the guys are safe before they travel, and there's so many players. So it looks like this is finally coming to a head in football, and while that, you know, maybe that's a good thing because the country starts to take it seriously because it's hitting football instead of other sports, it really is about to start slowing down that process, because we're a few weeks out and we know that getting ready to go play, as you're seeing in folks heading to NBA and NWSL and Major League Baseball, all people going to bubbles, that just going to their teams takes time. The NFL is also not a sport that is functioning with any kind of a bubble system. It is also not a sport that has rosters of like 10 to 15. It has rosters of, or 53-man roster, and they're looking at the preseason level to cut down from closer to 100 down to 53-man rosters, right? These are large meetings of people, and there are a lot of people between coaching staffs, training staffs, weight staffs, players, etc., all together the whole time. These are real problems that, because of where the country is with COVID, the NFL is facing, and they could shut the entire country down tomorrow. Based on what we know about this disease, numbers will go up for up to 2 weeks after that, because you show symptoms so much later, right? And so you could shut today, we're recording this on July 5th or July 6th, I'm sorry. If you shut the country down tomorrow, July 7th, you're waiting 2 weeks to before numbers potentially go down. And that's July 21st, which is when rookies are supposed to start showing up. You're really, really, really running into these issues in some ways for the first time as the NFL. And when you want to talk about sports and money, there is not a sport with more money than the NFL. So this is really about to be a problem.
And when you consider that the NFL has had the opportunity to actually let these other sports start and then kind of see how things are going to go. Like, they could have waited. I mean, maybe with the Hall of Fame game and the preseason games, they had to cancel those. But they could have waited to announce some of those things And seeing how the first week of the Bubble City went, or see how the first week of baseball went, what I think happened with the NFL is that they just looked at college football and they started analyzing how when those players were getting together in weight rooms, there were too many cases. LSU and the way that they had to isolate their players. What was happening? Boise State shut down. They brought the players in. They were like, this is not worth it. And then Boise State shut it down. They said, we're not doing this. And I think the NFL looked at like those scenarios and were like, those things look a lot more like what it's going to look like for us. And now we're starting to cancel stuff.
Clemson's got 30-something players testing positive just from summer weightlifting workouts that are socially distant. Like, this is rapidly spreading amongst large groups of people like that. And that not even every Clemson football player was on campus for these workouts. Like, anyway, it's a lot. And there's a lot for the NFL to work out. And it's looking more and more like they haven't really worked it out.
The piece that makes me think, okay, 2020, it's going to happen the way that we anticipate that it should happen for the NFL. Is actually the NFL's staunchness at the beginning of all of this with, we're going to do this the way that we've always done it. And the fact that they've had that mindset makes me think that unless something crazy happens, we're not going to get to a point where we're saying no football in 2020. Could we get to a point where there's a shortened season of some level? Because maybe they'd say, okay, we're going to use September to play preseason games, and then we're going to do a 12-game season the next 3 months. We maybe could get to something like that. Could we get to the point where the NFL is looking at bubbles? We could maybe get to something like that.
So that's, again, the reason I gave it a, you know, more like a B minus instead of an A plus is because there's so much money at stake, and the NFL has made it very clear that that's what's important to them, right?
Absolutely.
Like, in everything the NFL has ever done, the dollar is what drives all of their decision making. You can talk about safety in the NFL and this thing, that thing, from like big collisions and safeties coming down on drilling, crossing routes and stuff like that. But the real reason those things got like let go and like why you can't do those kinds of hits anymore is because they take away touchdowns and touchdowns sell. Like, they're not, the NFL has always been around the dollar, and that's always been their first and frontal lobe issue, right? It's been how much money can we make off of this thing? And they've done a very good job. They made a lot of money off of it. The way that that mindset corresponds with COVID may lead to some safety issues, but I don't think that they've given any indication that they care. And so while canceling preseason games gives me pause, I don't know that it necessarily gives a lot of them pause.
Was it a Freudian slip that you called it a frontal lobe issue and we're talking about the NFL? I digress. Anyway, you're right. I mean, the money at stake. And I mean, even going back kind of to brain stuff, like you talked about defenses having to change because of touchdowns being scored. What I would argue is that as much of a factor in that is that the NFL didn't want class action lawsuits in terms of the effects of all of these hits. So like, we're taking them out of the game. Like, we're not going to allow that to happen going forward because that's money that we could potentially lose. And the NFL, again, multi-billions of dollars. They've got to find a way to generate some of this revenue. Like, the NFL ownership groups aren't going to allow that money to just go away. They're going to find a way. That's why, like, when I look at this, even with the preseason cancellations, I could see the NFL saying, we're not going to play football in August, but we're going to roll out something in September so that way we could actually get our bubble situation together, create four different bubble scenarios, and just say the NFL teams are going to play in these bubbles, and you're going to play four games over, you know, 2 days or something to that effect, like actually creating a Sunday-Monday schedule where you get two games on Sunday in the bubble, then two games on Monday in the bubble, and just say, this is what we're going to do because this is what we have to do in order to get games in.
And you could stagger it where the NFC East plays Sunday-Monday and they get their round of games, and then the AFC East plays Tuesday-Wednesday. You could even stagger and take up every night if you wanted to. They'll find some creative way to make money on it. The NFL has shown that. They'll figure out some way to have hub cities for an entire division, and then maybe you just play division games, and then we do some more elaborate or elongated playoff bracket to get more games out of it. But the NFL is too money-focused for me to think this means there won't be football, for better or worse. I don't mean to act like that's a positive thing necessarily, but...
Friends, that is another edition of F in Sports. Three awesome thesis statements, lots of great discussion, worthy debate, maybe you should get on Twitter and yell at us a little bit about our takes. Parker, where can they yell at you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter and yell at me about my takes or about our mascot names or about whatever at Painsworth512. That's at PAINSWORTH512. All one word on Twitter and Instagram. I also respond to our FN Sports Twitter page fairly regularly. You can find my tweets with a dash PA or Shaka's tweets with a dash CC. And our FN Sports Twitter page is at FN Sports, the number 2, FINSPORTS, the number 2, all one word on Twitter. We also have an Instagram, Shaka.
Absolutely. You can find us on Instagram at F_N_sports. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Shaka Cummings, at ChakaCummings. And I am sure that that whole Caucasian colonist crack will go over swimmingly on Twitter. Thank you guys for listening. Please make sure that you like, subscribe, share, rate, review, do all those wonderful things to help out the podcast. And please remember, when it comes to sports,
don't flunk with us.
Later, guys.